This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Monday was the famous Met Gala, where models, designers, and celebrities dressed to impress according to a theme set by Anna Wintour. This year's theme was camp. Among the standouts, my picks for best dressed were Cardi B, Lady Gaga, Lupita Nyong'o, Janelle Monáe, Cara Delevingne, Zendaya, Jared Leto, and of course, the most talked about look and entrance of the evening, Billy Porter. Lena Waithe showed up in a suit emblazoned with this statement on the back of it: Black drag queens invented camp. Other people on the red carpet seemed to entirely miss the memo and thought that they were just going to any old red carpet, which is totally upsetting, but maybe I should have expected it. It is so fitting that I get to talk to a person today who wrote about camp in 1972, long before it occurred to Vogue or the world of mainstream fashion. Let me tell you about her. Esther Newton is retired from the Women's Studies Department at the University of Michigan. She was also professor of anthropology and Kempner Distinguished Professor at SUNY Purchase College in New York. She was a founder and co-chair of the Lesbian and Gay Studies program at SUNY Purchase. She's the author of numerous articles and the books Mother Camp, Female Impersonators in America, Cherry Grove, Fire Island, 60 Years in America's First Gay and Lesbian Town, and Margaret Mead Made Me Gay, Personal Essays, Public Ideas. Both won the Ruth Benedict Award of the Society of Lesbian and Gay Anthropologists of the American Anthropological Association. Her memoir, My Butch Career, published by Duke in 2018, is a Lammy finalist in the lesbian memoir category. It's been reviewed in Curve, the LA Review of Books, and the New Yorker, among others. Esther currently lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with her wife, Holly Hughes, and their five dogs, who all compete in canine sports. In the winter, she lives in Carefree, a women's resort in Florida. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Esther Newton.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me first begin by bowing down at your feet, sort of virtually. And fangirling just for a moment, because my little baby dyke self not only read Mother Camp like 18 times, but quoted it in my undergraduate thesis, which was on lesbian gender and butch femme in 1993.
Really?
So, yeah, so this is like, this interview is like a really long time coming for me.
Great.
So your book is called My Butch Career. And I think it's interesting to talk about butch right now, especially because in certain circles, it seems old fashioned or passé. And you talk in the intro about these changes in people who express their female masculinity, in butch folks, in trans folks. So how do you define butch? Let's start there.
Well, I, first of all, because I'm a historian as well as an anthropologist, I take the big view, and I would say that butch is a historic identity within lesbian culture. It's not always called butch. In African-American culture, the same basic role is called aggressives and other studs sometimes. But it has a long and actually very distinguished history, even though it arose within the working class, basically, working class lesbians. And so that it was that kind of butchness that I first encountered in 1959 when I came out in bars and the lower part of Manhattan, the Village, and lower, not Lower East Side, but the low part of Manhattan, and it was classic butch, although maybe back in 1920 it was different or different words were used. So that's the overview, and the interview, if you want to call it that, is that butches historically and now are females, that is, their sex is female, they were born and assigned as female, and they are masculine. And in other words, there are grown-up tomboys, and nowadays a lot of these tomboys transition. So in that sense, trans men are, I don't think there really are these supposedly sharp lines and huge distinctions between butches and trans men. And I think probably there's going to be more overlapping and, you know, some people getting hormones maybe, but not surgery, and other people having maybe top surgery, but no hormones. In other words, I see it's like a Venn diagram. There's a lot, and which Leslie Feinberg was the first one to say. And she lived that out in her own life. So does that help?
Yes. And I do wonder, like, what you make of the state of lesbian genders today, based on all you have seen and lived through and your own self-identity as butch. What do you think of the landscape now?
Well, that's pretty complicated. You know, at least at the college level, I don't know how many young women identify even as lesbian, forget mm-hmm. butch, now. And it's all changing so fast with non-binary and these other identities that are kind of collapsing, working toward collapsing traditional genders. And, you know, frankly, I never particularly liked the word lesbian myself. As one butch lesbian said to me once, oh, it makes it sound like we're foreigners. And but I accept it because that's, you know, that's what I've been the better part of my adult life. I like dyke better, actually. But I don't know. And I think there's a big difference between college-educated women and non-college-educated women in terms of, I think they're more people identify as lesbian. That's impressionistic, though. I'm not sure of it. So a lot more, there seemed to be a flowering of queer genders, let's say that.
And coming out for you, which you detail really honestly in this memoir, was not an easy process.
No.
It was not. And in some ways, it echoes the time that you came out in, right, where there wasn't a visible queer community at all. It was very underground. There was a lot of overt homophobia. What do you feel like finally helped you come out publicly?
Well, publicly is very different. The way it used to be, there were stages of coming out. There was coming out to yourself and saying, oh, I guess I'm a lesbian. Well, actually, the first stage is, oh, my God, I might be a lesbian. And then the next stage is, well, I guess I am a lesbian. And then the next stage would be finding other lesbians and other gay men, which that's how it was when I was young. And then coming out publicly in the sense that we mostly use it now, that didn't exist, except among drag queens and Butch Dykes, who sort of symbolized, they were out there because of how they looked. And people knew, and I could identify them as being queer. But all the other people were hiding, living double lives. And that was certainly my case for many years. I came out professionally in 1974 after I got tenure.
Which is still a practice today because tenure is so fraught with all these politics and academia. Lots of people are sort of, you know, stepping lightly until they get tenure in terms of who they are, but also like what they talk about publicly, what they write about, what they research.
Totally.
And so it was pretty amazing that you were like, oh, hey, my PhD thesis is going to be about drag queens. You had this amazing mentor who totally supported you.
Yes.
But you write that you think it did stall your career ultimately.
That it hurt my career, is that what you said? There's a little bit of static.
At the beginning.
I was at the time in graduate school, I was focused on finishing and getting out of there. It wasn't a happy time for me. So I just was kind of ignorant of, well, I mean, who can really foresee the future? But I would have liked to study lesbians, but I was too afraid that I would be identified with that myself, you know, because I was in the closet. And so I thought that, oh, I'll study these gay men. But really, honestly, I just wanted to do it. I just fell in love with these drag queens, and I just wanted to understand what was going on in that drag queen world and finish my thesis. But over time, it definitely, you know, if I had followed the correct anthropology career path and gone to New Guinea, then I would have been a full professor a lot sooner than I was. I wouldn't have gotten fired, stuff like that. So it really, you know, and I haven't had the recognition that other people with as many publications and teaching evaluations and all that. You couldn't really break out of that. She's not an anthropologist. She's a lesbian anthropologist.
Right. Okay, we're going to take our first commercial break. There's so much to dig into with this memoir, so stay with us. More with Esther Newton when we get back. Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is Masturbation Month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femdominance, May 17th, Sex and Your Cycle. May 24th, Expanding Your Orgasms Through Solo Play. And May 31st, Sex Toys for the Curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store pleasure ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service. Hey everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. And, you know, therapy has been a huge part of my life. I'm trying to think about how long it's been, probably like 26 or 27 years I've been in therapy. It's sort of a never-ending process, really. But I know that therapy can be scary for people. It can also be hard to access. I live in Los Angeles, for example, where therapy is super expensive. Everyone's really booked up. It's hard to even get in to see someone. That's why I'm excited about this new sponsor, BetterHelp. Basically, you can connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Everything you share is confidential, and you can get help on your own schedule, at your own pace. You can have secure video or phone sessions, plus you can chat and text with your therapist. And it's really a truly affordable option, I think, for folks who are looking for help, who are looking to work through some issues, and who live a really big life or just can't take time off of work or get to wherever they have to get to. In my case, it's the west side of Los Angeles to go to therapy. So I want to give you all this coupon. It's 10% off your first month with the discount code LOUDSEX. So you go to betterhelp.com/loudsex. You fill out a questionnaire. You get matched with one of the licensed therapists. There are 4,000 of them across all 50 states. And so 10% off, guys, betterhelp.com/loudsex. We are back talking to Esther Newton about her really fantastic memoir, My Butch Career. And we talked before the break about how studying drag queens was a passion. Like, you really wanted to do it and you were really into it, but it also slowed your career. I mean, in some ways, you were just like the earliest adopter of gender and sexuality studies. Because your book actually became really pivotal, but it wasn't until much later after it was published that it was seen as seminal to gay and lesbian studies as we know it today, and to lots of theory around gender. So how is it that you knew everything you knew so long ago before the rest of us?
Because my life experience was so painful. I growing up in a time when homosexuality was so despised and attacked and, you know, object of scorn and all that, I had such a struggle to come to terms with my gender presentation or identity, actually, and my sexuality, that I just, it made me so tenacious. Well, I guess I am kind of tenacious in my character, but it just made me want to understand what this world was and my place in it. And so, and then wanting to be a scholar, which, and a teacher, which was so incompatible at that time with being queer. And I guess, you know, the most succinct way to put it in terms of why drag queens was I felt like a female impersonator. And not in the same way, but my life experience and being in the closet taught me that gender is, I don't know if I like the word performative, Judy Butler's word, because a lot of people, I don't think she meant it this way, but a lot of people took it as, oh, and I can be this and I can be that. And that is not my experience of gender. But I knew I could impersonate a straight person, and I could impersonate femininity sort of with a struggle. So that became, it was kind of soul to soul for me with drag queens. And I loved gay men, sexist as many are. I thought they were so brave and funny, and I don't know where I'm going with this exactly, but sort of lost my destination along the way.
Well, you also ran in a sort of like nouveau queer art, literary, and feminist circles, both in the U.S. Yes. and when you lived in Paris. Basically, all of your friends were influential and pivotal queer women. Would you like? Do you agree with that, that you ran with the crowd that then became hotshots in the lesbian world?
Well, some of that is living in New York. I was where a lot of action was once second wave feminism and lesbian feminism. Not that there weren't things in other cities, but and there definitely were, but there was just so much in New York that the Lavender Menace and all these things. So I was right in the thick of it, and I could write and I could speak, so I could become somewhat of a public face. Well, at first it wasn't completely public, but it was within that world. And I was lovers with Louise Dishman, who's a famous painter, and Jill Johnston was a friend of mine, and there were a lot, and men, important men, especially by the time we got to the 80s, and there started to be a real movement of gay and lesbian intellectuals, historians primarily, and then the whole thing just took off. People started publishing, and so many important early intellectuals, some of them gay men, Jeff Escoffier and John D'Amelio, Alan Barraby, people like that, who were groundbreaking scholars. And we really were creating a field. I mean, when I wrote Mother Camp, I wasn't creating a field. I was trying to get my PhD in anthropology. And in fact, Mother Camp wasn't reviewed. It just, you know, sank like a stone. It took a lot of time for it to become so widely known and eventually recognized as such an important book in lesbian, gay, transgender studies.
And you're not afraid to write about sex in this book, which I really appreciate. Not just because I want to know about your sex life, but because I think sometimes people like leave out those parts of their memoir. And as someone who was closeted for a really long time, it does feel like you're completely on the other side of it, in that this is published by an academic press, and yet there's like some steamy, hot dyke sex in it. Did you ever think did you ever think like, oh, maybe I shouldn't put this in here?
Of course. Of course I thought that. But I, like I said, I'm very determined, and I wanted to be, I wanted to push the envelope on that because I just finished reading two other lesbian memoirs, and they both, in both of them, the author has, you know, lots of sex. It's never described. And I thought, I want to try to describe it. I thought it would be very hard to do it, but I wanted to try. Thought it was important, and it was, I mean, it's such an important part of experience, human experience. And it's not easy to represent lesbian sex.
No, because we're stuck with these sort of heteronormative, both language and scripts, sexual scripts.
Exactly. So, you know, the language is, it's either scientific, like you have a vagina, or else it's kind of, you know, male language, cunt, those kinds of things, and which lesbians use those words, of course, but it's, you know who did that the best, in my opinion, Monique Wittig. I don't know if you've ever read her.
I have, yes.
Oh, my God. Her writing is really hot about sex. It's very poetic, which mine is not. But I really wanted to try, and I thought, and you know, there's something about getting up into your 70s where it's kind of like, what the heck, you know? I'm going to go for it.
Okay, we're going to take another break. That seems like a good stopping point. I want to remind folks that this book is called My Butch Career. There are hot sex scenes in it, as well as a ton of GLBT history, because in some ways, Esther was making it and right in the middle of it. So it's a fascinating read, both as a memoir and as history. Let's take a break. Before we go, I want to tell you what's going on at the Pleasure Chest, because as you know, they have these Pleasure Ed classes. They're all free in their stores. And here's what's coming up. In New York City, May 15th, Spring Cleaning, a whole class on enema play. May 17th, The Awkward Sex and the City Comedy Show. In Los Angeles, May 14th, Performance Anxiety Comedy Show. And May 15th, Butt Sex Basics. In Chicago, May 15th, Energetic Sex. And then me, May 21st, I am doing a live podcast with the people, Ginger, Dylan, and Cooper from Life on the Swing Set. We're going to do a big crossover episode. There's going to be audience prizes and participation. That's May 21st. And then May 22nd, I'm teaching a class on G-spot and ejaculation. So hope to see some of you in Chicago. Let's take a break. More with Esther Newton when we get back. Let's get real. Stress is a worldwide epidemic. We're working too much, we're doing too much, and we're inundated with the constant news cycle. And stress can affect every single part of your life. Believe me, I know. I started meditating about 8 years ago, and it changed my life for the better. That's why I'm partnering with Calm, the number one app to help you reduce your anxiety and stress and help you sleep better. If you head to calm.com/Tristan, you'll get 25% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes guided meditations on issues like anxiety, stress, and focus, including a brand new meditation every day. There are also sleep stories, which are designed to help you relax, and there's even soothing music. Right now, Sex Out Loud listeners get a 25% off Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Get unlimited access to all of Calm's content today. Stop stressing and get calm. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My sex educator bootcamp training programs, level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. My guest today is Esther Newton. I am trying to keep it together and not fangirl for the entire hour. How am I doing? So, Esther, you're just 40 years old when this memoir ends. And, you know, you allude to certain things in your future life. Like, you drop this tiny little nugget, which is like, oh, hey, I met Amber Hollibaugh, and then we were together for 10 years. Okay, next subject. And I'm like, whoa. So, just because Amber Hollibaugh is also a really prominent dyke in history and culture. And Right. So is there going to be a second memoir? Can you give us more, or are you leaving us at 40?
I don't know yet. It depends how my health holds up, really.
Mm.
I just writing a book is a big deal. I'm sure you know. And, it takes a lot of energy, and actually the last 3 years, there were lots of interruptions to finishing my book's career. I remember one time I was in the emergency room, and Duke had sent me the page proof, and it was in Adobe, and I didn't know how to use it, and my brother-in-law was there. A great guy who was, running interference with the medical people and also keeping me company. And he showed me how to use Adobe Reader, I guess it is, to make comments, because you had to make comments on the page proofs.
Right.
In the ER, you know, and it was like, I have to finish this. I have to finish it. It all depends on how things. I'm 78, so there may or may not be a sequel.
Okay. Well, I want a sequel for one. Because also, I'm wondering if later in your career, you felt finally acknowledged and respected. I mean, you were one of the co-founders of the Lesbian and Gay Studies program at SUNY Purchase. Then you went on to do women and gender studies at University of Michigan. Did you at some point feel like, okay, now I'm getting the recognition that I deserve?
If I'm completely honest,
please,
I feel like I still haven't because of that. But within our queer world, yes, I do. And that's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. But I'm still in that box, that queer box. And it's worse for women than it is for men. A lot of gay men have been, or at least some gay men, authors, writers, actors, have been able to break out of that. Because heterosexuals are interested in other heterosexuals. At least that's what they're saying. So, I get pissed off. I'm listening to Terry Gross, and she's interviewing this one who grew up in some cult and some other one who, traveled the world. And she does very, very little gay material, hardly any. And that pisses me off. It's like, I think my memoir is as good as those memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a really good writer, and Actually, there was a big first recently, which was my book was given a brief review in the New Yorker.
Yes, and that seems huge.
That was huge to me. It was huge. And a lot of straight friends of mine saw it. I honestly wonder if Moshe Gessen isn't helping get some of these topics out there. In fact, mm-hmm. she is. And kudos to her. My audience has always been literate queer people. I didn't even think of reaching straight people, until recently, with this book, really.
And so this begs the question of the homophobia and the sexism that you faced beginning in the 50s, or maybe beginning when you were born, really.
Yes, yeah.
How much has the needle moved? How much has changed for sort of the GLBT rights movement in your mind?
Oh, a ton, but it's uneven. It's uneven both geographically, like depending on where you live in the country, and it's also uneven historically in that right now we're going backwards, for mm-hmm. example. And George Chauncey was able to show that in New York before the Depression and then McCarthyism, that gay life was very vibrant in New York, gay male life at any rate, and then had to go, into the closet, not be represented in film or on Broadway. So it's uneven in both those senses. We can't take it for granted. We have made a lot of progress, although when you're living within capitalism, some of it is ambiguous, shall we say. I mean, the Pride March this year in New York, there's an anti-corporate
yes.
march,
mm-hmm.
And if I were able to march, which I'm not, I would be with the anti-corporate one. So, was it a big deal that hired Martina Navratilova to talk up Subarus to lesbians? Yes. But
mm-hmm.
Gay marriage, is that a huge step forward? Yes. But is monogamy the best arrangement for people to live their lives? It's kind of the best one under the current circumstances, maybe, but there's lots of problems with it. And like many things, it's a complicated picture in my mind.
And I talked at the beginning of the show about camp, the Met Gala. Their
yeah.
theme this year was camp, and it seemed like the queer and queer-adjacent people totally went over the top with extravagance and humor and were fantastic. And then literally half the people who attended were just in like regular dresses and tuxedos. It was strange. Yeah. It was like strange. It's like there's Lady Gaga doing these crazy things on the red carpet. And then there's just like a model walking up wearing a regular dress and like, oh, you're just wearing a green dress. But do you feel like, along with queerness in some ways being co-opted by the mainstream, do you feel like the mainstream understands what camp is?
I can't speak for the mainstream, but to me, camp comes out of gay culture, queer culture. I don't think exclusively Black gay culture, but yes, Black gay culture. And, this show at the Met is a perfect example of what I was talking about, because is it a step forward? Yes, because if our culture isn't institutionalized, like at the Met, which is kind of the age, or in university libraries, or in podcasts, or, all these types of institutions exist within our society, it's going to be forgotten, or we could be wiped out. And so it is very important. But then on the other hand, you know, at heart, I'm a gay liberation front person. I want to see social justice, not just for us, but for everybody. And capitalism has, like, terrible, horrible problems that right now are being exacerbated, made worse. And so, but I the other day I did I was the honorary degree recipient at the Lavender graduation at the University of Michigan. And they every year have a special graduation for queer students, undergraduates and graduates and professional school and all that. It was the greatest event. And there were queer students there who were every bit as out there and campy as anybody I met in the 60s. You know, it's still, I don't know if we're born that way, but we certainly are that way. And the world is better for it.
But do you think that camp sort of mitigated by straight art or straight culture gets diluted in some way?
Well, yeah, sure. It gets co-opted. Yeah, it does. You know, just look at black music as in every commercial. You know, buy this toilet paper. You know, and you have, Rock and Sock'em in the background. It's just, yeah, there's no, but, you know, there's, This is our lives. There's no pure way out of it. And yes, gay culture. I mean, something that really pisses me off is all these roles now, film roles that are being played by straight people. You know, and they're representing trans people, and they're representing gay men, and they're representing lesbians. And it's like, see, we're still in that box. We're still in that box. And yet the box is our strength.
Say more about that.
Well, community is our strength. Banding together is our strength. That's how we create culture. That's how we learn about how to have sex. It's all kinds of things. And yet we're still stigmatized. We're still kept in our place. That's where we are. It's not the same as it was. Definitely not. I mean, and we made that happen. We made that happen. You know, the work of our institutions, Lambda and Sage, and, you know, oh, God, I saw that new building in L.A. is amazing.
Oh, it's dreamy.
I just saw it on Facebook. Is it as impressive as it looks?
It is, in person. It's this new, just for listeners, there's this $60 million building that the LGBT Center in LA erected, and it's like a whole campus. And the main focus is affordable subsidized housing for LGBT seniors, as well as housing, job training, and a safety net for LGBT homeless youth. It's addressing two really important issues at once. And I mean, the dream, of course, is mentorship, is the passing down of these histories, is the right. Sharing of culture. So it feels so important.
Yes.
Okay, we've gone over time. We're going to take a break. And no, there's going to be more. We have one more segment. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Esther Newton.
Thank you.
Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is Masturbation Month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femdominance. May 17th, sex in your cycle. May 24th, expanding your orgasms through solo play. And May 31st, sex toys for the curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store pleasure ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service. Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Help. It's hard to ask for, but we all need it. Something that's been a part of my self-care routine for decades is therapy. But I know that therapy can be hard to access for people because of finances, transportation, time off work, or just being intimidated. BetterHelp Online Counseling offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, trauma, anger, grief, and more. Connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Get help at your own time and at your own pace. Schedule secure video and phone sessions or text your therapist worldwide, and you can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's a truly affordable option, and Sex Out Loud listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code LOUDSEX. If you've been wanting to talk to someone, you can get started right now. Go to betterhelp.com/loudsex. Fill out the questionnaire, get matched with a counselor. It's that simple. Go to betterhelp.com/loudsex.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. As some of you may know, I'm writing my first memoir. And if you want to find out more about it, you can go to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/Tristan Taramino. And so I've actually been reading a ton of memoirs. I'm doing my own little kind of, you know, masterclass where I read about one memoir a week. If you want to stay tuned to like what I do, you can follow me on Instagram. And so I read Esther Newton's memoir in the context of reading a whole bunch of other memoirs. And to me, it was one of the most satisfying. I'm going to try to put that in words as to why. It felt incredibly honest, thoughtful. I felt like in the context of your own story, you had really great race and class analysis, which is sometimes like I just read Joan Didion. Of course, Joan Didion is brilliant, right? But like if I read another sentence about how she was going to just summer in Monaco because a friend of a friend like called her on the phone and said, oh, I have this place and no one's living there. You know, it's like, it's different for people who literally don't have to worry about money. So I like this incorporation of a sort of class and racial analysis. I feel like you refer to your whiteness, you claim it, you don't sort of try to do what most people do, which is a lot of white people ignore it. Was that intentional on your part?
From the beginning of my work, really, my master's thesis was on African-American single women and in Chicago. And I think it all goes, it's complex. You have to read my memoir, but which you have, but I've always been aware of class, social class and race, although that was more theoretical at first. Class, I lived it, class differences. I lived it. And and of course you live being white as well, but you, I wasn't very familiar with any people of color except the maids that my father had, which is not exactly, you know, being familiar with black culture. So at my work in Mother Camp is very aware of class. It's a theme that runs all through it, and how poor these guys were and how they were struggling just to survive and get the drugs they wanted. So I've always been very aware of that. And when I wrote Cherry Grove, I was very focused on that and on race, although I was never able to get narrators, you know, people who would tell me what it had been like. I was never able to get narrators of color. And that's a problem that white investigators have. But I was very aware that I couldn't get them, if you see what I mean. It's mm-hmm. like the first step is awareness of your privilege and your limitations because of who you are. Not that you can help, you know, you can't help who you were born into, but you've got to own it. There was a review in the LA Review of Books by that really, that was her biggest interest in my memoir. I can't remember what her name is now, but she reviewed my book at length, and that was the thing she liked about it the most, my awareness about class and race issues. I'm proud of that.
It's very thoughtful in that way. So we're almost out of time. I'm going to just toss you a softball question here at the end.
Right.
What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I want people to stand up for themselves, or who they feel themselves to be. And I started talking about this graduation thing, and you know, I had to think about it because I had never done a graduation speech before. And you know, in terms of what I can leave as a legacy, it's history, really. It's, look, we all come from someplace, and we have to know our lives would be so much richer if we understand where we came from. Because things that happen aren't accidents. They come from cultural and economic places. And, you know, and I want to be, I guess, remembered as, I was pretty cute when I was young.
There's also a lot of photos in this book. That was the other thing I was going to say is like, there's a lot of photos which are really good. Like as if you had like portraits taken, like of all your ex-girlfriends.
And the current one.
And the current one, of course.
And the current one.
Yeah. The wife. Yeah. Yes.
That's just a joke, but in a way it's not a joke because for so long I thought I was ugly. And then through FEMS, basically, I realized, oh, no, I got something. And that's a big deal. I wish that for everyone.
Acknowledgement and desirability.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you so much for talking to me, Esther. Yesterday was my birthday, and so I consider this...
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. I consider this a huge gift. It's pretty much the highlight of my week. And I appreciate you and everything you've done and the way that you've paved for queer people like me.
Great interview. I really enjoyed it.
So everyone, the book again is called My Butch Career, a memoir by Esther Newton. It's published by Duke University Press. You can get it at your local bookstore or anywhere you buy books. You can hear a clip of it, a super sexy clip. I mean, talk about sexy butch. There's a super sexy clip, Esther reading a little piece of the book at esther-newton.com. So you definitely want to check that out. And also, I love to follow Esther Newton on Facebook because there's an entire world we didn't talk about today, which is the world of dog showing and agility competitions and her her wife, Holly Hughes, who Wikipedia calls the controversial lesbian Holly Hughes. That's actually in your Wikipedia. So thank you so much for everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be the first part of a two-part series, which is the panel I recorded live at the Pleasure Chest called Centering Sex Worker Voices. So next week, that starts part one, and the week after will be part two. Until then, catch me on social media and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.